Revolution means that our people must be free.
Yes.
I left my country long ago as a refugee. Came to this land of maple syrup, not honey. It's called Turtle Island, not Canada, dummy. Turtle Island. Land where migrant workers bustle and toil. Immigrants get deported. Border officials kidnap our children for ransom. No one is illegal in your immigrant anthem. We didn't cross the borders. The borders crossed us.
You are listening to Word of Mouth News on CKLN 88.1 FM, broadcasted here live out of Ryerson University in Toronto. Today is Friday, December 3rd, 2010. I'm Craig Fortse. The first half hour of today's show is hosted here by No One Is Illegal Radio, where we'll be playing live recordings from the Rob Ford counter-inauguration demonstration on December 1st and discussing what an effective resistance in the city looks like. At 6:30 p.m., OCAP Radio will take the mic, bringing you the latest news from the front lines of poor people's struggles right here in Toronto. But first, the news.
Hello, everyone. My name is Yogi Acharya. First in the news, we have today's news. We start with Israel and apartheid, where Israel's cabinet has voted to build a facility to hold thousands of undocumented migrants who arrive in the country from Africa seeking work and better living conditions. The move is designed to provide center in the country's southern Negev desert, close to the border with Egypt, where migrants will be detained and prevented from working. Quote, "There is a swelling wave of threatening Israeli jobs, a wave of illegal migrants that we must stop because of the harsh implications for Israel's character," said Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister. The detention center, where the migrants will be housed, would be a, quote, "humanitarian solution," end quote, for dealing with migrants until they are expelled from Israel, he said. Eyal Gabay, the director general of Netanyahu's office, said the facility has been proposed at trying to stem a flow of illegal migrants, which, he said, had topped 35,000 in the past few weeks. Quote, "Israel is trying to fight a situation in which the state, its citizens, are vulnerable to infiltrators who enter with economic motives," end quote, "many of whom seek work illegally," he said earlier in an interview with Israel Radio.
In Fortress Europe, Swiss voters recently approved a plan for automatic deportation of foreigners who commit serious crimes or benefit fraud. In what was a significant victory for the Nationalist Party that pushed the proposal against the will of the government. Some 52.9% of voters backed the proposal from the Nationalist Swiss People's Party. It was opposed by 47.1% of voters. A government-backed counterproposal failed. It would have required a case-by-case review by a judge before an individual was deported. The SVP plan drew fire before the Swiss referendum from legal experts who said it could breach offenders' human rights. Marcello Cohen, a professor of international law at the Graduate Institute in Geneva, said people who had lived all their lives in Switzerland, married Swiss citizens, and had children but never obtained Swiss passports would be unusually hard hit by this expulsion. Under Switzerland's political system, any group wanting to change the law can collect 100,000 signatures to force a referendum. Last year, the country drew international condemnation after voters defied a government recommendation by approving a law to ban the construction of minarets. The government will now have to draft a law requiring automatic expulsion of foreigners found guilty of crimes such as murder, rape, drug dealing, or benefit fraud. Cohen predicted such a law would be challenged before the European Court of Human Rights. Likewise, the European Union, with which Switzerland has signed a bilateral treaty guaranteeing freedom of movement, would probably object to its citizens being automatically deported without the chance of judicial review. During the run-up to the vote, anti-racism groups bemoaned that the SVP's posters showed white sheep kicking black sheep off a Swiss flag, saying it played on stereotypical images of foreigners as criminals.
No kidding. Meanwhile, in Ireland, more than 100,000 Irish people took the streets of Dublin to protest against the international bailout and 4 years of austerity. Despite overnight snowstorms and freezing temperatures, huge crowds have gathered in O'Connell Street to demonstrate against the cuts aimed at driving down Ireland's colossal national debt. The angry but peaceful march has been met with a huge Garda presence, with up to 700 officers on duty working alongside 250 security guards for the Irish Congress of Trade Unions. Among the marchers, there is deep anger that most of the more than 680 billion from euros from the EU and the International Monetary Fund will be given to shore up Ireland's ailing banks. Marching in the rally was Irish builder Mick Wallace, who has had to lay off 100 workers due to the crash in the construction industry. Wallace said it was time the Irish become more militant. Quote, "We should be more like the French and get out on the streets more often, because our politicians go over to Europe and tell the EU that our people do not demonstrate. They don't take to the streets. It's time we change that and openly oppose what's going on," end quote, he said. Placards carried by the marchers reflect the mood of anger and humiliation being brought on by the EU and the IMF bank bailout. One was designed to look like an estate agent's billboard and read, quote, 3,599 square miles for sale, full planning permission granted, end quote. The protest has not halted at the GPO in Dublin, the scene of the 1916 rising where trade unionists and workers are denouncing the government's cost-cutting program, which takes 15 billion euros from the Irish poor and working class over the next 4 years.
Conversely, Iceland's president, Ólafur R. Grímsson, said his country is better off than Ireland thanks to the government's decision to allow the banks to fail 2 years ago and because the krona would be devalued. The difference, quote, is that in Iceland we allowed the banks to fail, end quote, Grímsson said in an interview with Bloomberg Television. Quote, there were private banks and we didn't pump money into them in order to keep them going. The state did not shoulder the responsibility of the failed private banks, end quote. Ireland's Prime Minister, Brian Cowan, said that this week his government had discussed an 85 billion euro bailout with the European Union and International Monetary Fund after the country's banks threatened to bring the euro member to the brink of bankruptcy. Iceland's banks, which still owe creditors about 85 billion, were split to create domestic units needed to keep the financial system running while foreign liabilities remained within the failed lenders. As a consequence, quote, Iceland is faring much better than anybody expected, end quote, Grímsson said. The Icelandic state's liability on foreign depositor claims stemming from IceSave accounts at failed Ladbanski Islands hedge fund should be put to a national referendum, he said. How far can we ask ordinary people, farmers and fishermen, teachers and doctors and nurses, to shoulder the responsibility of failed private banks, end quote, said Grímsson. That question, which has been at the core of the IceSave issue, will now be the burning issue in many European countries, end quote.
In related news, a major report by the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives senior economist Armin Yalnizian proves without a doubt that Canada's richest 1% enjoy more of the gains from economic growth than ever before in recorded history. The report looks at income trends over the past 90 years, revealing the richest 1% took 32% of all growth in incomes between 1997 and 2007, the biggest piece of action any generation of Canadians has taken. This, not coincidentally, has come during an era of massive neoliberal cuts to social services, wages, benefits, social housing and welfare in favor of tax cuts for Canada's richest people, deregulation of the banking industry, including big bailouts, and a race to the bottom in corporate taxes. You have to go all the way back to the 1920s to find a similar trend, and even then, the richest 1% didn't take so large of a share of income. The report can be found by going to www.policyalternatives.ca.
And in a serious blow to poor, Indigenous, migrant, queer, and other criminalized communities, former Chief of Police of Toronto, Julian Fantino, was elected as a Member of Parliament in Vaughan by less than 3% margin and will join Stephen Harper's government as a powerful weapon. The former Chief of Police of London and Toronto and York Region and former head of the OPP was responsible for the raids on the Six Nation Reclamation outside of Caledonia, has overseen massive racial profiling in the police forces he's worked with, including impunity for every police officer who shot and killed a member of our communities, and who has been publicly proven to have violated protocols in negotiations with the Mohawks in Tiendanega. Fantino will join a conservative government that has worked to criminalize young black men in Toronto as gang members, has criminalized undocumented people, is now seeking to criminalize refugees. Prime ministers usually stay out of by-elections, but Stephen Harper made a point of being at Fantino's campaign kickoff. Sports broadcaster Don Cherry, who has been involved in numerous scandals for making racist and ultranationalist comments, added his name to the campaign, delivering automated phone calls to Vaughan residents on behalf of Fantino.
And in Toronto, Mayor Rob Ford, in his first day in office, defended Toronto police for their actions during the G20. Quote, "I think the police do a good job," end quote, Ford said, adding he wouldn't interfere with the Special Investigations Unit investigating complaints into the police brutality during the summit. Quote, "Personally, if you didn't want to be down there, then you shouldn't have been down there. I didn't take any of my family out when there is a riot downtown," end quote. "I have very little sympathy for the people who were down there, and I support our police," he continued. Ford repeated his commitment to keep returning calls personally. You can reach him at 416-805-2146 to tell him what you think about the G20 policing and to tell him what you think about him. His phone number again is 416-805-2146.
And on the federal level, mounting resistance, outrage, and anger by migrant communities, refugee-serving agencies, and even a former head of the IRB has forced the three opposition parties to unite to vote down the conservative government's Bill C-49, the proposed, quote, human smuggling, end quote, legislation. Liberal leader Michael Ignatieff announced Wednesday that his party won't support Bill C-49 when it reaches second reading in the House of Commons, which would effectively kill the controversial measure. The bill would have criminalized and attacked both the important act of smuggling refugees and the refugees themselves. The fight, however, is not over for migrant communities, with the Liberals still willing to work with the Tories on the criminalization of the act of smuggling in what Ignatieff called, quote, a bill that works, end quote.